Blog Talk Radio.
This is Lori Smith. This is One Child Abuse Survivor to Another Restoration. Glad to be here. It's Monday night, July 29th, 10 p.m. here in Calgary, Alberta. Same time, same place. And I appreciate everybody's taking the time to listen to my shows. You know, I don't know who you are, and it's very nice of you to keep tuning in. And I've done so many shows, it's impossible for people to keep up with them over the years. You know, I just appreciate everybody who's taking the time to listen, and hopefully you're getting something out of them. Hopefully it's useful information for you. So we'll just continue on. Tonight we're looking at, we're going to do sort of toward, work towards the end of our boundary material from Hoboka.org. And just finishing up that article. It was really lengthy, but I thought it was really worth going over and looking at. It's been helpful for me. It actually has helped me out a lot, that article, and taking a look at where I'm at as far as healthy boundaries go in my own life, you know, what I need to work on, you know, not being taught proper boundaries as a young person, as a child growing up in this abusive environment, abusive home, then carrying on this garbage for years, not even realizing, you know, that I was so messed up. And until later in life when I realized, like, wow, I've seriously got a lot of work to do. And it's been a long road and long haul. But, like, this article I found was pretty good. You can find it from Hoboka.org. That's Help for Adult Victims of Child Abuse. That's not a Morris Center program. Hoboka.org and HAVOCA.org. It's under their Survivors Information tab. And it'll be under the boundaries. So that's where you can find that. And this is the last part of it called a help sheet. And the help sheet's really just, I was just taking a quick look at it. It's kind of a summary of that whole lengthy article. But I think it's worth looking at because it included a little bit more information that's a little bit, goes into a little bit more detail about some of the stuff that they were talking about. So it'll be worth taking a look at. And then we're going to be done with that article. So that's great. So we'll just be working on finishing this up. Probably won't be able to finish it tonight, but maybe within the next couple of shows, or maybe in the next two shows. So tonight and another show should do it. So that's what we're doing. And, you know, if you're a survivor of abuse, you know, you need to make sure that you're safe enough to be listening to this show. And, you know, if you don't know, you know, whether or not you're safe enough to be listening, that it's going to trigger you, or even what that is, you need to get that information first. So there's lots of places you can get it. ASCA, Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, a Morris Center program. They have a safety chapter in their Survivor to Thriver workbook, and I'm a volunteer with them. And that's worth reading. It's a big, lengthy chapter, and it's worth looking at, you know, to make sure that you're safe enough that, you know, this information or any information about abuse or anything like that isn't going to bother you and then send you backward in your healing journey or cause you to maybe, you know, hurt yourself or hurt somebody else. You just don't want that. It's better to be safe, you know, and if you're not very far in your healing journey, you want to maybe have someone who supports you in your journey to go through that information with you. You know, if you have like a counselor or a therapist or a support buddy, you know, or you know, somebody like a good friend or your partner, whatever, somebody who can help you so that you're not on your own doing this stuff, you know, because this, you know, this sort of stuff is so hard on survivors of abuse. I know I've been dealing with this my whole life, and I understand like how hard this stuff is. It really is. I'm doing quite well on my healing journey, and I'm a long ways into it. So, you know, I'm 10 years this side of it. So I started my healing journey when I was 42. I'm now 53. So actually 11 years now on my healing journey. But I didn't do the bulk of it until about 2009, 2010. That's when I really started getting into it. So it's been about 10 years for me that I've been really seriously working on it. That's a long time. So, yeah, I'm much further along than I was when I first started. So let me tell you, it's so important to know whether you're safe enough. Get that information. If you're not sure, just turn the show off and you can come back at another time when you know that you're safe enough, right? And anybody else who's listening, make sure you listen at your own discretion because I'm talking about abuse. Very sensitive topic. If it's going to bother you, then you need to make the right choice for yourself and turn it off or listen to something else, right? So we'll get into this. We're looking at this article, How Am I Doing on My Healing Journey? First of all, I always ask myself, that's the question, you know, how am I doing? Well, I'm doing pretty good because I'm continuing on. I did take last week off because I was so tired. I was just exhausted last Monday. Sorry about that, but I was just wiped out. And this week, I've just been in so much pain. I mean, just physical pain and some emotional pain. My husband passed away a year ago, August the 4th. So it's coming up on the one-year anniversary when my husband passed away, which is bringing back some sadness and some sad memories, which have been there the whole time anyway, because it's a horrible situation. He was my best friend. He's my love, you know. I just love this man. He was good to me. He treated me really well, you know, and I miss him terribly, and I knew that would happen. He was diagnosed terminally ill 17 years ago. So 18 years ago, actually. In 2001, so it wasn't any new thought that he might go. We had been planning for this for a long time, but how, you know, how prepared can you be when somebody's going to pass away, right? You know, you never really can be fully prepared. It's something that it is a shock, you know, and now I'm having to do this without him, life without my love, you know, and it's hard. So I couldn't concentrate on my healing journey too much until just recently. So that's kind of, I did actually skip quite a few shows because of that, and months worth of shows. And I, you know, just had to deal with the grief, really. But now I'm starting to feel better, and I'm starting to feel stronger, and I can do this work. And so I'm doing pretty good. I'm glad I'm still on my healing journey. So that's where I'm at tonight. I'm just glad to be continuing on and making a little bit of headway here and there, progress, you know. And so it's good to get an idea of where we're at in our journey, what we need to work on, right? So we'll look at this help information for adult victims of child abuse. This is HAVOCA, and it's called Boundaries, and it's the help sheet. So I'm reading right from the webpage, and the person that wrote this article, I'm not sure if it was a guy, I think it was a gentleman who wrote this. It's really well done. I liked the whole thing. Parts of it didn't relate to me too much, but most of it made sense to me, so hopefully it's helpful for you too. So there's a help sheet. They said, the purpose of setting personal boundaries is to take care of yourself. Learning how to set boundaries is a vital part of learning to own yourself, or learning to respect yourself, of learning to love yourself. If you never have to set a boundary, then you will never get in touch with who you really are. You'll never learn to define yourself in a healthy way. No one deserves to be treated abusively. No one deserves to be lied to and betrayed. We all deserve to be treated with respect and dignity. See, I love this because that's my main message, man. It's like, hello, wake up, you know. But a lot of the world doesn't feel that. I wouldn't say most of the world. I don't know, because I don't know most of the world's people. People that I've run into, I mean, there's very few that think that respect and dignity is a good idea. It's like, people just love to hurt people, and they love it when they can get somebody, and they feel like they're real happy if they've made somebody have a horrible day. I I absolutely hate people like that. I really do. Because my parents were like that. I grew up in this hellhole. I call it hell because it really was, along with my siblings. And, you know, how dare people be like that? You know, they don't want to be treated like that. You know, for anybody who says, well, why shouldn't I be able to hurt somebody? It's my right, you know. That's what my mother used to say. It was her right that she could bash my head in and practically kill me and beat me to death, and that was her right. And the thing is like, if you turned around, if somebody turned around and did the same thing to them, they wouldn't like it. You know, they wouldn't like being treated with disrespect and zero dignity as a human being. But they think it's perfectly okay for them to do that to you or to me. This is where boundaries really come into play. What we're going to allow in our life, right? This is what they're talking about. This is me talking now, right? Like, it's vital and it is important. It's hard for abuse survivors, any type of abuse survivor, to stand up for ourselves, to realize that we do have rights, that we do have the right to be treated with respect. Common courtesy, common human dignity, common respect. We have to give it too. So we can't be treating other people abusively, and we can't be disrespectful to other people, and we can't treat people with, you know, zero dignity if we, and then expect that we're going to be treated with that, you know. We need to treat people how we want to be treated. And if someone isn't treating us with respect, with dignity, with the common decency as a human being to another human being, they shouldn't be in our lives. You know what I mean? So this is what they're talking about with these boundaries. It's so important. We have to set them in order to know what's right and what's wrong with how we're going to allow people to treat us, right? I mean, I knew a long time ago. I was like, no one is going to abuse me anymore. I mean, I was abused as a child my whole youth. Like, my whole childhood was abusive. And, you know, even CSA child sexual abuse in there too, along with all the other abuse. I was like, you know what? No. No more, you know. And I find that people do become abusive towards me for whatever reason. They just don't like me or whatever. I have a lot of people that don't like me. Well, whatever. Not everybody likes everybody else, right? But the minute they step out of line and start being abusive, I'm like, you know, if it's not worth the trouble to pursue it, to get them to change their behavior towards me, I leave the situation. Because I'm like, you know what? I don't need any more of that. You know what I mean? I've already had enough of that. I'm not taking any more of that. But that doesn't mean that I go pushing other people around either. I'm definitely not a pushy person. I mean, I'm a humble person. I'm not out to hurt anybody. I'm not out to cause any problems with anybody. I'm not out to start any trouble with anybody. Right? And basically, I'm out there just trying to live and let live, you know? But you find that there's a lot of people out there that aren't like that. And they love to push people around and they love to build themselves up and push you down. And that's in any type of relationship. It could be a friendship. It could be a working relationship. You know, a boss or manager. It could be a coworker. It could be, you know, some sort of a friend or a relative or whatever. You know, and it's not okay. There's a lot of mentally ill people out there that are very, very psychologically ill. And just because, you know, they're not in treatment or they haven't told you they're in treatment doesn't mean that they're not psychologically ill. And so becoming from an abuse, being abused as a child and, you know, and then in my adult life, having to take more abuse from people who are just really sick, it's like, no, no, sometimes it's not worth it. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, like, no, I quit jobs. I leave relationships. I have pushed back before in several situations. That's what people don't realize about me. I'm not a pushover. I just choose my pick my battles. I choose and pick my battles. If it's worth it to me, I will stick it out and I will fight. If the job is not worth it to me or the relationship's not worth it to me, I'm gone. Because I'm like, look, you know, I don't need it. Life's too short. I make the decision whether it's worth it for the fight. If it's not worth it for the fight, then I'm gone. I just bow out respectfully. It's like, you go on with your sickness and I'm going to go get something better. You know what I mean? But that's, I've learned how to stand up for myself that way. But it's taken a long time and it does take some nerve and it takes some grit because, you know, it's going to make waves. They do talk about that later here, so we'll move on with this article. But it is quite interesting. But it says, I like what he says here. He says, if you do not respect yourself, if you do not start awakening to your right to be treated with respect and dignity and your responsibility in creating that in your life, then you will be more comfortable being involved with people who abuse you than with people who treat you in loving ways. And you know, that's true. It's so strange and bizarre, but it's funny because when people treat me right is when I usually have an emotional breakdown. I usually end up crying, and I find that I'm very sensitive and upset and when people are being good to me because I'm not used to it. And so when I find somebody who treats me right and all of a sudden things are going well, I actually kind of freak out because I'm like, oh, this is just too good to be true. It's not real because I grew up abused. You know, it's funny because for me, it's an issue of I never knew a day in my childhood that was not abusive, some sort of abuse, whether it's psychological, verbal, emotional, just fear in the house, you know, someone's going to kill someone. I just grew up with a lot of violence, and a lot of abuse. So that's my nature. So for when I'm around people that are good to me and things are going right, all of a sudden I start to panic because I'm like, this is different. It's like, hey, something's, so it's weird for me to be in a situation where things are good, where people are treating me right and all is going well. I don't know how to even take it. But I'm starting to learn that it's okay. It's okay when things go well and people are good to me and I can manage with that. I'm learning as an adult to be able to do that and to understand it and to soak it all in while the moments last, because they don't last forever, you know, finding these relationships that work for a while or some sort of a job that you get for a while that's just really great or, you know, whatever the situation is, it doesn't usually last forever. And then when it's over, it's sad because it's like, oh, that's too bad, you know, it was great. But it's true. If we don't learn how to love ourselves and that we actually do deserve to be treated with care and respect and dignity just like everybody else, we sometimes are just, it's that comfort level of, you know, what we're used to. We may just feel more comfortable being around people who will take advantage of us or who will tend to abuse us, right? And that's not cool. That's not okay. So boundaries are hard issues. They said here, learning to set boundaries is vital to learning to love yourself and to communicating to others that you have worth. There are basically three parts to a boundary. The first two are setting the boundary. The third is what you will do to defend that boundary. So that was the first part of this article. They're just recapping it here. But they said, if you is a description of the behavior you find unacceptable. So like if you do this or if you do that or, you know, if you don't do this or don't, or the other one is I will. So it's a description of what action you will take to protect and care of yourself in the event that the other person violates the boundary. So for instance, if you continue this behavior, quote unquote, I will, is a description of what steps you will take to protect the boundary that you've set. So an example of these three parts would be, quote unquote, if you ever hit me again, I will call the police and press charges. I will leave this relationship. If you continue to threaten me, I will get a restraining order and prepare to defend myself in whatever manner is necessary. So they said it's not always necessary or appropriate to share the third part of this formula with the other person when setting a boundary. Well, that's true because the third part is, you know, is letting them know that what you're going to do to protect that boundary. So if you say to your partner or somebody, you know, who could become violent and hurt and abuse you or hurt you or even kill you, and you tell them that you'll leave the relationship, a lot of women, especially women, maybe some men too, probably some men here and there, but mostly women have been killed in this type of situation because their abusive partner kills them because they've said that they're going to leave the relationship. So you got to be really, this article I found by them even stating that is kind of not very, I wouldn't have even put that in there because if you go to the DV domestic violence websites, they'll tell you exactly what not to do, what to do and what not to do. And that's something that you don't want to do. because it automatically puts it can cause the abuser to then make a decision that, you know, is going to either end up in murder or, you know, something like that. Just absolutely horrific. You have to be very, very careful. So I wouldn't even, like, for them to put that in there, I mean, that's fine, but I wouldn't go with that information, really. That's, to me, it's a little bit too, you know, most people can't tell an abuser that they're going to leave the relationship, right? Because it's not always necessary or appropriate to share that part, though, they said. The first two steps are the actual parts of setting the boundary. The third part is something you need to know for yourself so that you know what action you can take if the other person violates the boundary. So if you set up a boundary up and expect that the other person to abide by it automatically, then you're setting yourself up to be a victim of your expectations. That's true because people don't necessarily change that quickly, or it may take them time to figure it out. Right? They said it's not enough to just set the boundaries. It's necessary to be willing to do whatever it takes to enforce them. So you need to be willing to go to any length, do whatever it takes to protect yourself. It's also very important to set consequences that you're willing to enforce. If you're setting boundaries in a relationship and you're not yet at a point where you're ready to leave the relationship, then don't say that you'll leave. You can say that you'll start considering all the options, including leaving, but don't state that you're going to do something that you're not ready to do. And they said if you set boundaries and do not enforce them, it gives the other person an excuse to continue with the same old behavior. And many times I think, you know, the issue is people will continue on with the same old behavior regardless whether they think you're going to enforce them or not, because abusers are generally aggressive types. We're talking like this. We're not talking about, you know, friends quibbling on a playground. You know, we're talking abusive people, people who are, you know, not looking out for our best interests. In other words, generally, you know, if it's a boss, they generally don't care. Sometimes they do. I mean, sometimes it works to state our needs, and, you know, if they're not being met, then we'll look for another job or whatever, or we'll take it to their manager. Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But in an abusive environment with a domestic violence, especially such a serious issue, most of the time abusers are the aggressors and they don't care. You know, they're for an abuser to change, it's not that they can't, because I'm sure there's been people that have, you know, and I've never met one, but there must be out there somewhere somebody who was an abuser who actually changed their heart and changed the way they behaved around people and actually, you know, made it right. I don't know any, but the thing is I'm sure it's possible, but the thing is abusers, you know, they're doing it for control. There's a reason why they're abusing, and it's generally an issue of control. So for them to change, you know, they have to see that what they're doing is wrong, right? You can set all the boundaries you want to, but if they don't see that their behavior is wrong, it just continues on and on. Even if you tell them it's wrong, they don't care. I mean, I'm just talking from experience, because my parents fought from the day I was born. They actually fought from the time they were married, which was way before I was born. My parents fought from, like, what, 90s, from the day they were married until the day that my mother died. I mean, literally for like almost 50 years, they were highly abusive to each other and to their children. But they didn't care. My mother didn't care the way she was treating my dad. My dad did not care the way he was treating her. They didn't care. They just didn't care. They didn't think there was just anything wrong with their behavior, even though they had been brought up on and busted on child abuse charges. They had been told by the courts that they had to get help for their marital issues, and they needed to see a counselor for this and that, and the whole family had to see counseling, and they never did. They went to two sessions or something. They just kept that behavior right on, even after the CPS. Well, while CPS was around, they sort of had to cool it, but once CPS was gone, it all started again. They were like, right on, the fight's back on. They just loved to suffer and to hurt each other. It was absolutely sick and disgusting, their behavior. Totally unnecessary, all of it. except for they were mentally and psychologically ill. But the issue is they could have got help, and they were told to get help, but they wouldn't get help, neither one of them. So this is the issue with abuse and boundaries and problems. You know, quite often the person that's causing the issues, you know, is not going to want to change, right? They're not going to want to deal with their, they're going to think they're fine. It's you that's got the problem. They actually go on to talk about that here a little bit later. We've only got about 5 minutes left, so we'll have to pick this up again for sure next weekend. But you can read it for yourself if you go right to the website there. But they said, setting a boundary is not making a threat. It's communicating clearly what the consequences will be if the other person continues to treat us in an unacceptable manner. And it is a consequence of the other person's behavior. So setting a boundary is not an attempt to control the other person. Oh, yeah, here's where they mention it. Although some of the people who you set boundaries with will certainly accuse you of that, just as some will interpret it as a threat. Setting a boundary is part of the process of defining yourself and what is acceptable to you. It is a major step in taking what you control, what control you can of how you allow others to treat you. It is a vital responsibility to yourself and your life. They said, setting a boundary is not a more sophisticated way of manipulation, although some people will say they are setting boundaries when in fact they are attempting to manipulate. The difference between setting a boundary in a good, healthy way and manipulating is this. When you set a boundary, you let go of the outcome. So when you set a boundary, you just set the boundary, and if the other person doesn't change, you can't really help that. There's nothing you can do. You know, it's a sad situation, but so many people have to deal with this stuff, you know, in their adult lives after coming from abuse and child abuse and or even, you know, domestic violence and whatnot, and then entering into another type of relationship, you know, whatever type of relationship it is, doesn't matter, whether it's a work relationship, like I said, or a friendship or anything else, and just to be hurt all over again. Then we start to feel like, well, is just this just the way it is for me in life? Like, is this always the way it's going to be? We do have to take a look at ourselves, you know, and make sure that we're not the cause of these issues, right? And that's where we need to watch our own behavior. You know, like my, you know, just because I, speaking from experience, my own parents were like that. If they would have just stopped, and both of them, and taken a look at their behaviors and worked on changing those horrible behaviors, they might have got along, you know, and stopped trying to kill each other. But the thing is, they didn't want to do that. It was a blame game all the time. It was the other person's fault. Always the other person. Oh, it's your father. Oh, it's your mother. Right? And it's, you know, or it's my crazy husband, or oh, it's my crazy wife. You know, they never, ever took responsibility for the behavior. So that's where I started at 42 years old, at the age of 42, after I started my healing journey, taking a look at my own behaviors, why I was doing what I was doing. And I started my healing journey that way because I thought, you know, this is not okay, you know. It's not okay what happened to me. Abuse is not okay. It's not okay what I went through. It's not okay what I'm having to deal with because of the abuse and the trauma. But I need to do some changing in order to have a healthy life. You know what I mean? I got to change. And then I need to expect that other people are going to treat me with decency and respect. And I need to do the same for them too. And it's a huge, huge issue, but most people don't want to do it. It's either because they feel that they're fine, and it's the world that's messed up, and that they don't need to change, right? They won't take a look at themselves and do any kind of self, you know, introspective look at what they're doing and how they're behaving, or they just don't care. A lot of times, it's that, right? A lot of people don't care, right? So we have about a minute left, so we'll have to pick this up. We're looking at next time, making choices. That's where we'll pick up, and self-empowerment. So, yeah, maybe this will be about 3 shows probably, another 2 to finish this off. But you can grab it from havoca.org, HAVOCA.org, under their Survivor tab, under Personal Boundaries. It's called Help Sheet. And thanks, everybody, for being here. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a great night. I always say this on all of my shows. You know, make sure, like, if you're struggling and you don't know what you're going to do, because I've been there, you know. I've been so down, so far down in the pit that, man, I was sure I couldn't even take another breath. There was no way I could keep going. I tell you what, if you're at that point or anywhere near there, you make a phone call. There's people like me. There's people that are better than me, nicer than me, more helpful than me, sitting on those crisis lines. And they want to help. And they want to help you. That's why they're sitting there. They're not getting paid. Even if they are getting paid, it's not enough to do the job that they're doing. They're doing it because they want to help. Probably because they've been there themselves, that they know somebody who's been to the edge, and they don't know, you know, they've been there, and they know what it's like, right? I know what it's like, right? And so if you're at that point and you don't know what you're going to do and you can't even figure out what you're going to do for the next 5 minutes, you know, I know I've been there. What I want you to do is make a phone call. You call a crisis line. You call a suicide hotline. You call NASCA members, NAASCA.org. Go to the members. Go to the members list with the telephone number. You call somebody and you get some help. I don't care. Because it's up to you. You have to live. You have to get help, because people aren't going to do it for you. Just like I was sitting there, nobody's going to come and even realize that I was so messed up from the abuse that I suffered. Nobody even knew that I was so screwed up. There's no way that they could help me. So I started reaching out. So I'm telling you what, you make a phone call, you do something, you get help. Join an anonymous group, whatever it is, get a counselor, get a therapist. I don't care, get help, right? And don't struggle on your own, don't suffer on your own. It's not okay, right? But you will be okay. I had a friend tell me that years ago. You'll be okay. My good friend Kate in Australia. And I'm so thankful that she told me that, because nobody had ever told me that before. And I'm telling you that right now. So you take it easy, and I hope that you'll meet me back here next Monday night. Have a good night, everybody. Talk to you soon.